can always cut this part out. Good soup.
It's actually this sounds so much more immersive now.
Yeah, right?
Like, honestly,
what the hell?
It's really odd.
It's weird to listen to myself, though.
Yeah, imagine what we're going through every time.
Hello and welcome back to The Common Room, undoubtedly the number one podcast in Leeuwarden.
In India.
And India, and we're conquering the world. That's our goal. We're back in the studio for another month, and this month we're going to be talking about religion and science and our relationship with both of them. Because we're in final week, and we just wanted to talk about something that we're comfortable with, you know, talk about something we don't really have to think much about.
Yeah, like the question about the nature of being, stuff
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, of course, because we're intellectuals, we're linguophiles. It doesn't take as much effort to think about these topics.
Speak for yourself.
Okay, so let's answer the profound question, which is basically we're here to break down the meaning of life. What do you guys think about the Big Bang Theory? Because it's been disproved as of recently.
I think it's quite an interesting TV series. I used to watch it, you know, with Sheldon Cooper.
It's actually not quite funny. I think it's so not funny.
Well, yeah, in the later series, I mean, seasons, it got quite boring. That's why I stopped. But
I think any show that has a laugh track, okay, not any show, because Family Guy, for example, is funny, but most shows that have a laugh track are horrible, and I cannot bear to watch them.
But Family Guy doesn't have a laugh track, does it?
Oh, shit. Maybe that's why I like it.
Okay. I love how we didn't even manage to stay on topic for like a solid 5 seconds. You linguophiles.
Friends and How I Met Your Mother, for example, do have laugh tracks. And what, Finn? Why are you looking at me like that? Do you really want to break down the meaning of life, right?
No. I'm just here. You know, continue.
But yeah, I hate it when they start laughing. It's just, it's like, if it's funny, it's funny. I don't need a fucking laugh track to laugh about it.
Yeah, I never watched any of those shows.
I've never watched the extent of any of those shows, just like one-off episodes when it plays on Fox.
Yeah, same for me.
Yeah, but you were saying?
No, I just wanted to say, yeah, that if it's funny, you don't need to have like laughing in behind, you know? It's just funny itself, and actors can be laughing by their own, in their own.
But sometimes people like when they have clarity about what to do, when they have some guidance, such as in religion, that tells them how they should behave. What do you guys think about that?
That's a very good segue.
I mean,
I guess that's what religion is.
I think religion can be as like some positive sides, but I think like especially the Catholic Church took like a shape to it that it's completely wrong in a sense, because they sort of impose the fact that if you're like, I mean, in the past, right now, it's not to the same extent as before, but in the past, they just imposed the fact, oh, if you're not Catholic, you're not like on the good side, or you're not gonna be a good person. And they were like colonizing places, saying, oh, you either gonna be Catholic or you're gonna be a slave. So obviously the choice wasn't like big, and people just comply to that, and like culturally it's still in their culture to be Catholic right now. And so I think like the institution in this case is the problem, not the meaning itself or the idea itself around religion, because I believe that some Catholic thoughts and some Catholic ideas can be really good. You know, in the Bible, Jesus states, for example, just don't do the stuff that you wouldn't like happening to yourself, you know. And I believe that if everyone would use the same sort of spirit, the world would be a much better place. And the church, though, has way too much power, like especially in a country like Italy right now, they still influence political decisions, even though they're not supposed to. But for example, like gay marriages or in general, like gay rights are a big like question in Italy, and the passage of laws that sort of helps those community are always like more complicated because of the church. And if the church has to slow down like process of development and human rights and the civil rights, then I believe that we're getting to an extent where religion is just something not good, but not because of the ideal of religion itself, because religion can give us a bigger purpose, but because it's like the institution is just like getting the wrong idea and abusing of the power, you know? Like the Pope used to abuse of their power too much. I always say this, like the Vatican Museum, guys, is the house of the Pope. It should be like a humble place where the Pope lives like with his religion and with the nuns and stuff. And that's the most beautiful building I've ever seen in my life. It's crazy the quantity of art and the quantity of like beautiful stuff that are all in there. Because the Pope had the power and he used to say to people, okay, I'm gonna give you like shelter and then you come here and you just draw this for me and blah, blah, blah. And that's abuse of power, while like people in the same city of Rome were starving to death. There are like records of popes dying because they ate too much. Like there is this Pope that died because of like he ate too much. Like there were like lunches that had like 40 or 50 like actual plates courses that would be served. Yeah, curses. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think like the problem is the church and not the religion, because as I said, it gives like a bigger purpose and it can be good for people. And this is like mostly of the Catholic Church, but we can also see extremism maybe that is a problem in like Muslim religion. And it's also, well, we created like a sort of terror around extremism, and maybe it's like too much. And the idea that we have like of Muslim people in Western Europe and the US, it's like a bit biased and not always correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I do agree with your point of the church having good principles, because that's sort of what religion was introduced in my life at first as. My grandma is very religious and she also has very good principles. She believes in exactly what you said, Luca, like don't do to others what you don't want to be done to yourself. And my parents and my grandma taught me that growing up. So I think that religion was quite important in my life in that sense of instilling good principles. And also you sort of, at least I tried to keep myself accountable growing up when I was more religious and I wanted to be a good person, because, you know, I bought into the whole thing of going to heaven, confessing. So I always try to be a good person, and I think that's good. I don't think that you should necessarily get guilt tripped about this fictional future where you can go to heaven or hell depending on how good you are and this final judgment. But I think that the principles of religion are very important to instill. Just, I guess you don't need religion to instill those principles. Like I don't necessarily need to make my children religious in order to pass these values on to them. Which begs the question then, is religion that important nowadays?
Mm-hmm.
Especially with a recent trend of more and more people becoming atheists, people moving away from religion, especially because of science becoming, you know, like the rise in education over the last century, people becoming more educated, more people going to university, getting taught, you know, about science and about not just sciences and like biology and chemistry, but, you know, like, how do I explain it? Like,
critical thinking.
Yeah. Like sort of, modularized approach at thinking, you know, not just thinking for the sake of it, but like, you know, how you need to have a hypothesis and you need to find evidence. Like for me, that's science. It's not just talking about, cells and, reproduction and stuff. It's just like having
the scientific method.
Yeah,
you mean.
Exactly. Yeah. Thank you, Finn.
You're welcome.
Appreciate that. So more people are getting educated. More people are seeing the value of science, and less people are, at least I think in our generation, definitely there's less people who are consider themselves religious compared to my parents' generation, and especially my grandparents' generation, where religion was very common. My grandma went to church like every Sunday, and she was part of the church choir, and I don't take part in any of that.
Yeah, I think religion is still very important, because I think it's generally super important for people to believe in something. And I think there also have been studies or just experiments showing that people, when they have some genuine belief in something, it can be themselves or something else, some purpose in life that they have. But oftentimes it's religion that people believe in. They are just more determined and they can persevere more. They can resist. They can go through more damage or more pain or more painful experiences because they have that genuine belief that they are, you know, advancing towards, and they just have the courage and the determination. And religion is that belief for a lot of people, and I believe that it's improving their lives. Because even though you're going through some hardship, you know, you're going through a hard life situation, if you believe in, for example, God, you still at least have that comfort of, oh, it's all part of the of God's plan. You know, I'm just a small part of something much bigger than myself, and I have to go through this in order for the big plan to work. Or, okay, if I go through this, God has something else prepared for me after I manage to do this. And it just gives you motivation and helps you really go through this struggle in your life. And that's why I have this little discrepancy or paradox that I would really love to believe in something higher, some higher beings or God or some spirits, whatever religion we can think of. I would really love to believe in that, because I think it would help me in my life. It would just make it a bit easier to always have this comfort to rely on. But I just genuinely don't believe in any of this, in anything higher, because I think I'm just very set on rationale and rationality and scientific method and reasoning. And if I believe something, I really want to have solid evidence. And I just don't see solid evidence in these higher beings or something greater than humans. I just haven't been presented with proof that I would see credible. So I just genuinely don't believe anything like that exists. But I would love to believe, if that makes sense.
Well, then let me ask you a question. You're not religious, and you said that you think religion helps people to face hardship and, you know, be resilient throughout life. Would you say that you found an alternative, or do you have a goal or something that helps you to deal with hardships and stay resilient?
Mm-hmm. I do, but it just didn't come about randomly. Let's say it was developed through me going through those hardships that I have had in my life, and then being in that difficult situation, and then facing the dilemma of, wow, how am I gonna pull through this? How can I even do this? And there I didn't have the comfort of relying on something higher or bigger than myself. So I just somehow needed to persevere. Maybe I had a role model, or I just, I think we could say that role model in my mom, and then just my family, that we don't give up. That I just told myself, okay, I'll just need to try harder, and then hopefully it will get better. And then I did, and then it really got better. And then it showed me, okay, you are capable of going through these things and similar things. So if you did it now you're even stronger, and you'll do it again. So like, these experiences showed me that I need to believe in myself and that I can do these things. So we can say that I mainly believe in myself and my abilities, and just my determination and perseverance.
It's funny, because you're saying that makes me feel like religion is like living life on easy mode. you know, you always have like this thing to fall back on. And in case something goes wrong, like you just have this inconvenience in your life, you can be like, okay, this is all part of God's plan. Everything will make sense one day. And that is what religious people in my family believe in. But I think I believe in the value of hardship. I've gone through hardship in my life as well, and I feel like it has changed me for the better. And I think that hardship is important. Someone who doesn't go through hardship will never learn lessons, will never improve, will never seek out to be better, will never develop. So I think it's part of life, and it's important for you to go through hardship. And I feel like you can always come out stronger out of each experience as long as you sort of have a good attitude about it, the attitude that you described, as in, you know, life has me, like, I'm between a rock and a hard place right now, but you can persevere. I think you, from your personal experience, have learned that. I've learned that as well. And I don't think that religion is fundamentally necessary for you to overcome these things.
I don't think, though, you could say, I mean, maybe I'm just misinterpreting what you said, but saying it's like living life on easy mode, I think is quite a...
It was a bit of a joke.
Provocative statement, yeah. Because, of course, it's not believing in God, I think, or believing in yourself. It sort of relates to what Tim said. It's just different ways of believing in your own strength, whether you believe in your strength as an individual, in your resilience, or whether you believe in your strength of faith. And that's what enables you to pull through. I think both are entirely legitimate ways of pulling through hardships. I think really they're both just instruments in that sense then of coping with it. And also to the very beginning, because we talked about this before, but the Big Bang Theory wasn't disproven.
I know. I was leaving that out there for us to come back to at the end of the episode.
I just wanted to put that out before people were properly confused. It wasn't.
It wasn't. Should we sort of go into that a little bit?
I think it was just a viral misinformation thing.
Leave that out there.
I didn't want to leave that out there. Because,
understandable.
You know, if someone switched off this podcast in the first 10 minutes, then their takeaway now is the Big Bang Theory was disproven, which it wasn't.
And that the TV series was okay, but not that bad.
That's almost the worst piece of misinformation. Really, you're absolutely right. No, sorry, I sort of took the conversation off course now again. Wanted to put that out there, but regarding the whole...
Maybe explain the context behind that.
The context of the Big Bang Theory not being disproven.
Yes.
Well, I think it was just with the launching of the James Webb Telescope and some new findings that it brought. And then some quote from some astronomer, I'm sorry, I'm really missing sources and names, was taken out of context and sort of went viral. But as far as I understood it, really the findings of the James Webb Telescope didn't disprove the Big Bang Theory, but if anyone gave new evidence for it, for some sort of cosmic origin in the sense of like background radiation stuff. But that sort of goes into
the nitty-gritty. And I was caught in this sort of torrent of misinformation because I went up to Finn and I don't know what we were discussing. Maybe we were just talking about what are we going to talk about in this podcast. And I was like, oh yeah, I think we were talking about the theory, like the sort of Christian theory behind the creation of the world, which is the 7 days that six. God created the world. Is it six?
The seven was rest.
Yeah, because Sunday.
It's Sunday. Okay, my bad.
More information.
So the 6 days where the world was created versus the Big Bang Theory. And I was like, oh, Finn, well, I saw on Instagram that the Big Bang Theory was disproven. And then we searched it up and turns out it wasn't.
Yeah.
Which somehow makes me feel even better about how sound science is.
I think actually bringing up the story of creation right now is very interesting, though, also in this context, because we now sort of... Luca, you touched upon it, sort of, okay, the value of religion in this sense as maybe as a carrier of values and something, but not necessarily as institutionalized religion as it does exist. And I think it's actually very interesting because I entirely agree with that statement. Like, the way that the church, and now, of course, that's a very European-centric Christian perspective. When we're talking about the church, we're mostly talking about the Christian church here, but I feel like it also applies to all other sorts almost of institutionalized religions. But that's the specific example that I know things about, so I'm just going to stick with it. I think it's interesting to see there are even several stories of creation in the end, even in the Bible, because what is not supposed, or like what religion, and that's what I believe, religion is not supposed to be, is in any way providing knowledge, but if anything, communicating values. Because I agree, there's value in statements such like love thy neighbor, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. Or, you know, he who is without sin shall throw the first stone or something, about not judging other people for sins you yourself have committed, or these sort of things. But in these senses that really often we talk about science and religion as sort of these opposites that I believe they are really not, because of course I believe in the scientific method and that science should have the monopoly on knowledge, but that doesn't mean that religion cannot serve as sort of a carrier of values, because values and knowledge, while certainly intertwined in many cases, do not need to compete in that sense. You know, of course, the earth is not flat, but round. So it was really, from the institutionalized church back in the day, to say that it wasn't, it was really stepping out of their area of forte, you'd say, and encroaching on this monopoly of knowledge that science should hold. And that's why institutionalized religion can be a problem, or when you have going against LGBTQ rights or something in religion, in the way that also these old writings are interpreted. And of course, I mean, the Bible holds a lot of bigot ideology as well, because how many thousands of years ago was it written? And I think if you keep that in mind, then there can still be value in religion, as I also believe that there's value in tradition, because when entering a church, I always feel this sense of awe. Okay, this is a place of worship that has existed for so long, and there's a certain beauty in that. Such a tradition can be upheld. But at the same time, I can very much be aware of the fact that religion is not ultimately what tells you what it's right, but just another carrier of value, as many other things can also be, what Tim really talked about. If you find another carrier of value for yourself, that's just as legitimate. But for some people, religion can be that carrier, I think.
I do really love the fact that churches really carry that sort of atmosphere. Even if you're not religious, I've been taught to step into a church and, you know, like, shut up or lower your voice, sit down, like, respect sort of the whole atmosphere that's going on. And even not being religious, sometimes it's really nice to just go in there and, like, respect it, you know, admire it. Because they are always very beautiful buildings. The architecture is very nice. And there's sort of this whole calm atmosphere in the church that sometimes is nice to observe and sit in. Leaves me like really in peace with myself whenever I do go in there.
But I mean, to add on that note, I think that it's also applicable. For example, if you go to the theater, bro, you shut up and you respect the place where you are and you like the actors play, you know? It's just, it can be applicable to many other things, but I do agree with you that, like, the church, like, if you step in St. Peter's, how huge it is just sort of creates you, like, a sort of, oh, I'm shy, or I wouldn't dare to do certain things, you know what I mean? Or it's even when you step, like, into a really big stadium that can be, I don't know, the Camp Nou, bro, there are, like, 90,000 seats there, and you're just, like, speechless, and you say, imagine, like, I'm just, like, a dot in the middle of a lot of things, you know? And I mean, that gives you like a sort of respect for the place where you are, for the players that played in there. And that can be the same for like St. Peter's, you know, in Rome. And that tells you like, oh, in this place, like how many popes have stepped in here, how many like celebrities were here, how many like values were given to people, or how many people believed into that, you know, really, like, took care of it. How much money they spent to build this, because, bro, one time they didn't have money to eat, but to build churches they did, you know? And that makes me think. But I wanted to come back to something that Finn said, like when he said, oh, people used to believe that the earth was flat. And this makes me think how much your conception of the world is changed if you think that like the earth is flat and the sun turns around us, you know. Instead, it's the opposite, you know. And once you like believe into that and you believe that like humans are the center of the universe and that perspective changes, it must be like super, super sick, you know. Like when Galileo found out that, I can imagine that, like all your convictions are completely destroyed. It's like it can be comparable to finding out that Santa Claus doesn't exist for a kid, you know. That like your presents come from your parents and they are actual money into it, you know. So having the conviction, like the church gave conviction to the people of a reality that wasn't true, you know. Like if you were born before Galileo's existence, you lived and died thinking that you were the center of the universe, you know. While now we live and die knowing that we're like a small dot in the middle of nothing, you know. And that's incredible. Like it gives a total different perspective of what your life is gonna be. Also, if you're not religious, I mean, it's sad to imagine the fact that I always say this phrase, but one day you're gonna be food for worms. Like that's what your destiny is gonna be about. Okay, you can be cremated and you can be like ash, but it's the same. The concept is the same, you know? Like everything that you do in your life, you can find a purpose to it or not find a purpose. It's up to you. It's up to the person. It's up to you to be religious or not. But in the end, the ending of our life, it's exactly the same. And like, as I said, like you don't, like, as we said, you don't need to be religious to think about it. But it's crazy to think like that your perspective can be changed completely just because of like what the church taught you. And that really strikes me. And I don't know, there are, I believe, some people that still are convinced that like the earth was created by God in 6 days by, you know, doing some sort of gesture. Yeah. And I mean, it's unbelievable that it's actually like this. And also like he didn't like said, oh, I'm gonna put these animals there and these humans here. Actually, it was like Darwin said that we're just like the result of evolution, you know. And that's also another theory that makes you think like, oh, maybe in 50,000 years, we're not gonna be here and there's gonna be something more evolved than us that maybe we'll understand that like doing war against each other is not smart, you know? Or maybe life on Earth would be like, again, dinosaurs because we're gonna get extincted, you know? Like in the lifespan of the, I don't know, 4 billion years that the Earth was created, humans are just like a click, you know? Or just like a matter of like seconds, even less probably. So we lived here for a while, but we shaped and we created such a broad picture of it. And yeah, religion helped us doing it. I think like the way the world is shaped and the ideas that we have right now are shaped by that. Or even words that we use, conceptions that we have are so religiously hidden, you know. I don't know, Genesis, for example, means beginning, and that's the first book of the Bible. It's called the Genesis, you know. And this is just an example, but there are so many.
Luca really is diving into the meaning of life right now.
Mm-hmm. I do like the appropriately depressing talk about becoming food for worms when we're in week 9 of our term.
I think it's really relatable. Like all of us at this point would be like, why can't we finish right now and become food for worms in this moment?
Well, tomorrow you'll be a free man.
Hopefully, bro. Let's hope. Maybe I'm not going to wake up, you know. There is always the possibility.
Oh my God. Becoming nihilists all of a sudden. But I do think, well, you've raised a very valid point, Luca, because I think that it sort of brings some consolation to believe that this isn't everything, that there is something more, you know, whether it be heaven or, I don't know, you turning into a ghost or being reborn. Like religion does provide some sort of comfort in that sense. And I think that even if I'm not strictly religious, I would say that I don't abide by institutionalized religion, but I still believe in something greater, as opposed to Tim, I think that life is too valuable, too important, too rare for it to just have happened just like that. And we still don't know why the Big Bang happened. So I don't know. I just think that maybe also because it makes me feel more comfortable or more at ease, but I do think that there's like something greater, or just that like life doesn't make sense because everything happens when it's supposed to happen. And that, I guess that brings some sort of comfort to my life, and I prefer to think that way.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting, this topic of death and comfort. And I have a concrete example of a small contradiction, let's say, in my beliefs, because as I explained, yeah, I don't believe in these higher things. I'm an atheist. But at the same time, during Christmas, when we meet up with our family, before we eat, we all of us stand and we say a little speech, like, oh, we are so grateful to see each other again and to celebrate this holiday. And we're like saying hi to all family members that have sadly passed away and who are now overwatching us from up there, from the clouds, from heaven. And we really wish they were here, but they are still with us because they are still looking after us from up there. And even though I don't really believe that that is the case, I still like to tell myself it is the case when we are saying it during that Christmas dinner, because it just makes me feel at ease, because it's much more comfortable to believe that, yes, they are still up there looking at me, seeing what I'm doing, how I'm living, rather than to admit to myself that that's not true and they are just simply gone and there's no way of bringing them back. So again, even though I genuinely really don't believe it, I just tell it to myself to feel more comfortable and more at ease and just have, yeah, an easier mind, let's say. And also last time I was talking to a friend and we came across this topic of life after death, or what happens after death. And they told me that they believe there is something after death. And then they asked me, what about you? And I was just like, look, I think when I die, and that's it, you know, full stop, and end of the tale. And they were like, yeah, really? Doesn't it make you scared? Like, they were quite genuinely surprised. And I don't know, I just have this view that, yes, it can be very scaring, a very daunting thought to realize, like Luca said, tomorrow something bad can happen, like people die all sorts of random ways, anything can happen, and our journey might just end, which is incredibly scary. But I like to look at it from, let's say, a motivational point of view, that when you realize that, wow, we have been given this very unique opportunity to live life and to experience this, and knowing that there is a definite end, it gives me motivation to make most of this rare opportunity I've been given by chance, let's say, of being born here. So I have this chance, and it's up to me how what I'll make of it. You know, if I live a fulfilling life doing what I like to do, meeting with people that I like to meet, and just doing what my heart desires, or doing something else. And I'm very motivated to do the first thing, not the latter.
Mm-hmm. Is it then, though, motivation through being afraid of death? Or is it like, is there a fear of death still for you? Or is this just, you know, happens?
I think there is still some sort of a fear. Like, I surely wouldn't like to die in the next decades, because I know that I just haven't done a lot. Like, if I manage to live through those decades, I'll just have so much time to do so many amazing things. And the sooner I die, the sooner I'll be prevented from doing them. So there is still the fear, but it's more unconscious. Like, I don't realize it very often. Like, what I realize more often is the motivational part. Like, yeah, let's let's do this. Like, a nice opportunity comes up, yeah, let's do it. Like, I only live once. Why limit myself? And then there is another contradictory small thing today is because I'm realizing that, yes, I don't want to die in the next decades because it will prevent me from doing cool things. But one of the cool things I like is doing like extreme sports and having some very extreme experiences that can go bad, you know, like climbing or ziplining or skydiving or bungee jumping. Like, those are experiences that many people are afraid of because they think they might die. But I have this opinion that you feel the most alive when you feel like you're about to die. So I just love them.
Right. I think, it echoes with me what you said, because personally it's always kind of odd for me. I've had a discussion to that effect recently as well, but it's sort of in my head, of course. I'm also like, you know, I didn't mind not being born, so why should I mind not being alive after I die? Which rationally argued sort of makes sense, right? And I often also quite bad in taste, perhaps, like, joke about these sort of things. You know, also with like doing maybe stupid stuff, it's always like, well, either this is going to work and it's going to be fun, or it's not going to be my problem anymore. But then at the same time, if I really do think about it, it does scare me, the thought that it would just end, because similarly to you, I would like to believe that it doesn't. But then again, as an advocate of the scientific method, I have no reason to believe that it would continue. So I'm always a bit torn. Like you said, it's not something you are constantly aware of, really, right? I don't think about the prospect of my own death very often. But still, ultimately, if I really do force myself to think about it, I think I know that I am afraid, or I would be afraid of the time to come, because it's also always this romanticized notion of, okay, yeah, you know, isn't there also beauty and things being finite, and then you're going to grow old, you're going to have lived a fulfilling life, and then you're going to die, and that sort of closes your arc. But I think the problem really is that you never die in the future. You'll always die in the now, because that's where you live. And I don't necessarily believe I'll ever reach the point where I'm sort of sitting there being 90 going like, well, you know, might as well die now. I think it's very much natural to always be like, well, another day, you know, just experience another day, because it is quite miraculous to live in the first place. And yeah, so to that effect, I think.
But I do have a question for you.
Please.
Like, don't you think that this sort of rationality, where people are like aware of this thing of being aware of the fact that one day you're gonna die, is like a positive thing in a sense? Because if you live all your life with like the thought of, or one day I'm gonna end up in a better or a worse place, it just gives you like, unitize your behavior in a certain direction, you know? You know what I mean? Like, oh, I'm doing this well because I'm gonna be in heaven one day. Why can't you simply be a good person because you want to be a good person, not because there is something after, you know? Like, it's much better if you think about it, like, because then people are genuine, you know, and they're rational in what they're saying. You know, okay, I'm gonna kill someone, it's a shitty thing, but at least you know, oh, I'm not gonna go to hell, because that's just not the way it is, you know? Or I'm gonna help this homeless person, I'm gonna buy him like a sandwich because I feel it's good, because it makes me feel good. Not because, oh, it's God that wants me to do this, because that's the message, you know? And this thing, I believe it's a lot better. Like, he also creates maybe more individualistic society, and people gives less a shit about other people. And that's, I believe, one of the reasons of why capitalism took place so much, because religion really unified people in a sense, and they were motivated in doing good actions because of it. But now you have like a lot of more reality, you know, a lot more people that do stuff for, not for a greater purpose, but because they feel good about it. And that's much more genuine. So my question is, don't you think this is much better than actually believing into something and doing action just because you think you're going to end up in heaven?
I do agree with it, actually. My comment was more to the effect, really, of then still being... Because I agree, like, you should be able to just do good because you want to do good and not because you are some sort of, like, forced from the outside to do good, or, like, believe that you would be forced from the outside because there's this prospect of eternal life or eternal suffering after death. I entirely agree with you there. Sort of goes, I mean, we had it in like psychology courses, right? Being internally motivated to do good or being externally motivated mm-hmm. to do good. So I agree with you there. But, and I've also sort of determined for myself in that sense that really my purpose should probably just be to have a good time and to make sure that the people around me are having a good time and then I am happy. Because really that's all that there needs to be for purpose in my life, I think. But that doesn't change the fact that I am aware of the fact, like, that I am still aware that I am going to die, and that I can be afraid of dying, knowing that it will be the full stop that Tim talked about. So maybe it's true, like I believe it's true. Maybe it makes it more genuine. I don't know if genuine is the word, but like, if people are then motivated also to do good from just the pure of their hearts instead of some outside force, I believe you should know, sort of, yeah. I agree with you there, but it doesn't change the fact that I think you can be afraid of death then, mm-hmm. even though you know you've done good and yeah. you've just done it because you want to be good of a person, which would lead to the question of what is good. But
let's not go. I was just thinking about that, because continuing from what Lucas said, can you really be good unless you actively choose to do so? Because there's a difference between, I don't know, this, look, like, if you look at it like this, there's a difference between you not causing any harm to people because you're harmless, or not causing any harm to people because you choose not to do so. So for example, if you were like a trained martial artist and you knew that you could fuck anybody up, but you just, you know, you restrained yourself. Why would you do that? If you consider yourself to be a good person, why would you be getting into bar fights? Why would you be confrontational with people, you know? But if you're just, I don't know, 150, you weigh 50 kg, you can't hurt anyone, then, like, are you really a good person by not hurting other people?
How does that relate?
To being good?
No, how does it relate to the question of doing good because you are intrinsically motivated to do so, or because you are externally motivated
to do
so? That's
a physical limitation.
Well, yeah, it's not directly related to religion, but I was more talking about, like, can you really be good unless you're restraining yourself or unless it's a choice? So rather than you just being driven to be good by religion, Lucas says that it's better, and I agree with him, that you choose to do so. You know, you restrain yourself. You choose to walk the path of good. You choose not to do evil things. And I was asking the question, can you really do that unless you have the choice?
Well, but religious people also have the choice, don't they? In that sense, really, whether you believe you shouldn't harm another person because it's part of your faith or because you just believe that as one of your values, in both cases you choose not to because it doesn't align with the person you want to be. No, so the choice itself is still done to that effect. And but maybe I'm also misunderstanding the question. I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, well, to add on that, I think it is your choice because of two reasons. The second one is that a person not being muscular doesn't prevent them from not being able to do bad. Like, even if we are talking only about physical harm, they can get a knife, they can get a gun if they really want to physically hurt someone. That's the first reason. The second reason, doing bad isn't only causing physical harm. Like, the 50 kg guy can do bad other things. They can lie, they can cheat, they can manipulate. So
being physical examples. Sorry if I didn't really word myself properly here, guys, but I just chose this one specific example. I'm not saying that you need to be a trained martial artist in order to hurt people. Not at all. What I am saying is that I think that the value of being good must come from a choice, or, like, you need to be able to harm people, and then you need to be like, well, I choose not to do so because it is within my values, you know, intrinsical values. And I was sort of making that comparison. Maybe the comparison wasn't very well made. To being religious and acting out of fear for hell. Like, you're doing good because you're just like, oh, if I don't do good, then I'm going to hell. Compared to you doing good because you want to be good, because you want to be a good person, rather than fearing some external force.
No. Yeah, I get your point. And it does make sense. It does make sense. And also, now I understood also the example that you brought up. And yeah, I mean, it can be sort of relatable because it has to come from a choice. And yeah, I do agree with that. But I wanted to raise another point, which is, do you guys think that when you're going to grow old, you're going to be more like conservative towards life? So you're going to be more attached towards life? Because now I always say, oh, yeah, I don't want to grow old. I don't want to, when I'm going to be in my 60s, I want to be already in a coffin or something. But then I see people like getting old. I see the example of my grandma, and my grandma, she's 83, and she's like, well, but until I live well, why can't I live, you know? Like, she's really attached to life, you know? It's not that she has developed a sort of greediness of saying, yeah, I want to live, like, more time because in the end I'm having a good time, you know what I mean? And I'm afraid and I'm scared of what and if there is something next, you know? And yeah, that makes me think, because right now I think, like, in your 20s, I mean, I'm not in my 20s yet, but still, like, whenever at this young age, it's really easy to say, oh yeah, when I'm gonna be 60, I'm gonna be bored. Or, but maybe you just develop new interest, and you, as I said, develop some sort of greediness, and you're like, no, I want to live more because I can still give something to people, and I want to live it until the end as much as possible.
Well, I can't answer the question from an 80-year-old person's perspective, but I think that whenever you're confronted with a near-death situation or with a dangerous situation, it's almost as if your perspective always shifts and you suddenly become aware of how feeble or how vulnerable you can be in certain situations. But first of all, I also think that that's what gives life its value. And second of all, I think that if you have lived through life and you've made so many memories, so many experiences, and you're in your 80s, you wouldn't be as greedy as I would be now that I'm 19 if I was confronted with a near-death situation. Like, right now, I would think what Tim thought. I have so many decades ahead of me. There are so many things that I want to achieve and accomplish. And I feel like when you're old, you've lived out your life, you know, you've had those decades, you've had your opportunity, you've had your shot at life, and maybe it can be a little bit daunting for you to have to accept that. But I think that,
so you're basically saying that probably you would accept more?
Yeah.
Because I would say the same, you know. But as I said, by experience, my grandparents, bro, they're really like, no, I want to stay here, you know. I don't accept the fact that it's my turn to go. But yeah, I do agree with you. I mean, it also depends how you're staying, because probably if you have like some sort of Alzheimer or Parkinson, and you would be able, like, until your mind works, maybe you're just like, oh, this is not living, you know, euthanasia, it's just the simple solution. But yeah, I do agree with you also. Probably I would accept my situation more, but
I definitely
concrete examples telling me something else. That's why I asked you guys.
I definitely don't think I would react that like that nowadays, though. Like, I think it is because of that, of living that life and having those experiences and having your shot at life. Because right now, if I was confronted with a near-death situation, I would be scared shitless.
No. But yeah. That's why it's so hypothetical.
Not merely ready to let go. But I also think that you shouldn't steer away from those, like, going out of your comfort zone and going skydiving and going on roller coasters, because you're so attached to life, you're like clinging to life, and you think that you should try to steer away from danger as much as possible, because that is not really living. You're not really giving any value to your life, even if you live a long life.
I actually think I disagree with you. Because it sort of relates to what I said previously with you never die in the future. Of course, like, makes sense to say that now, but I don't think when I'm old I'll be like, oh, I've had my shot at living. Because the moment you say that, you are still living, right? And even if you're in old age, I think there's just different enjoyment to be derived. So I don't think I will reach the point in my life, really. Like, if I notice I am dying right now, I'd like to believe that I have at some point reached the point where I can say properly, oh, I am, it's okay. But I don't think I'll ever read, like, I think I'd always choose another day over it. And from a personal example, I also, like, my grandmother has severe dementia. She barely remembers anything, but she's still enjoying life. So who am I to say that at that point, or like, I probably also wouldn't say then that at that point, oh, maybe enough's enough. I think because what Tim said with, it's such a, what is the probability of even being alive in the first place? Why would I choose to just live one day fewer than I possibly could? Because I've had my shot at life. I think it relates to what I said with, you never die in the future. You always die in the now. And in the now, I will never choose to die, I think.
But Finn, I think you've misunderstood me, because I'm not saying that in the sense as, oh, why don't I take a euthanasia pill today? You know, I'm done with life. I mean that it would bring me comfort that I have had the luck of having a long life, and I've had the opportunity to do so many things with my life. So I think if I was in that position, I can only imagine it from my perspective now, I would sort of like to look back at my life and feel bliss rather than to feel an impending doom that my death may come near, you know?
No, that I get, and I also didn't now argue for, like, I didn't think that you were arguing in any case for euthanasia here, but I still think that I will, when I'm 80, still be as attached to my life as I am now. That's really what I'm saying. I don't think I will be less attached to my life. I will hopefully be glad of having lived a good life thus far, but I will not in any case be less or more daunted at the prospect of nip in the bud.
You know what's really interesting? My grandma is quite old. She's in her 80s. And whenever I talk to her about these sort of things, she constantly says that her point to life nowadays is her family. It's us. It's seeing me and my cousin, you know, study and graduate. It's seeing my dad do well. It's seeing my like my aunt do well, because they're her kids and we're her grandkids. And that's the perspective that she has. Like, I definitely don't think it's the perspective that all old people have, but she really is like, she sort of, for her living, she sort of lives through us. That's her unique perspective on life at the moment, because she says that she's old and, you know, she doesn't really have as much mobility as she did before. She has like osteoporosis. So her life is sort of, she's always whether living with my like dad and our family, or with my aunt and her family. And she sort of like really always wants to know what's going on in our lives. She's always asking, she's always wondering, always calling us. And she does have that attitude of like, my life has no point unless you guys are in it. Like, you guys are the ones who make me alive through your experiences. And it sort of reminds me of her of her youth and when she was discovering life, when she was going through her hardships. So she definitely has a very interesting approach at life in her 80s. And I wonder, since we share the same genes, if I will have the same one.
Yeah, I think I agree with Finn that when you're older, it's still hard to, let's say, give up on life, because you still, oftentimes you still have a lot to live for. It might have changed during your life. So like at some periods in your life, you live for your friends, and then for your hobbies, and then for your work maybe. And then generally, as you get older, majority of the people live for their family, because they are grandparents, they have children and grandkids. And that's just like you right now explained, that's the majority of the joy of their life, their grandkids visiting them cooking for them, talking to them, asking how life is going. So it just changes, but they still have something to live for, so it makes it very hard to abandon that thing. And I was just thinking whether it sometimes changes, and I came up when we were mentioning euthanasia, when we had this class about people that are very ill, or let's say just handicapped, and basically all they do, they are just bedridden and they can't even move, they can't even talk. They're basically, their mind is still working, but their body isn't working at all, and therefore they're just living, but not living, if you know what I mean, because they're just lying. They can't talk, they can't communicate, they can just lie in a bed. And I was thinking to myself, just like, what would I do in this situation? And my first instinct would be, well, I think I would try to get them to kill me. I would try to get them to just go through euthanasia with me, because I wouldn't have any joy that I'm having now with my current life, with a healthy body. Like, I wouldn't be able to do sports, I wouldn't be able to travel, I wouldn't be able to communicate with my friends, I wouldn't be able to really see anything. Like, all the joy that I have now just wouldn't be there. So that seems like an obvious choice to me. On the other hand, I still can imagine that if I unfortunately reach that situation, I would still be very unwilling to give up, because it's just, yeah, it's an unrepairable decision. You can never undie. So,
yeah, it's actually maybe as also a last note on the topic there, but for example, I think, I mean, this is quite an extreme example you've given. There's certainly one that exists. And I mean, of course, we know that people exist who want to take their lives, who have taken their lives. So the possibility exists. But my father used to be a first responder, so a medic, really. And he said that even there, a lot of the cases, people so desperate that they had already, I don't know, taken an overdose or done whatever. In most cases, the people calling to alert them that, you know, there's an emergency, they need to go, are the people themselves. Or then they try to vomit it up 5 minutes after they've done it. Because I think there is, for many people, and I'm not for everyone, clearly, because there are people who have taken such an irreparable decision. But there is an urge to live that I don't think you lose in any situation. And thus is also why I said, I don't think I will ever reach a point where I say, I'm kind of, I don't care anymore. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm.
It's almost like a primal or survival instinct that is sort of unleashed in these near death situations.
Yeah. I think that's really what you can say. There's something in a lot of people that in the end tells them stay alive.
I wanted to add on what you, Vasco, said about the extreme sports and how you encourage people to do it and to go out of their comfort zone. I just wanted to add, well, it's also a thing of survival instincts. Like when you're about to bungee jump, you're standing there on the edge of the tower and your survival instincts are screaming like, what the fuck are you doing? You're about to die. Just go back, get to the ladder and go back. But then you, if you want to do it, you just need to overcome it. And I think a helpful way of looking at this is, well, rationale and reasoning and evidence and statistics, because I love these extreme experiences and extreme sports, but as I value my life, I don't do things that are too extreme or just outright dangerous. Because when I look at the statistics of skydiving accidents or bungee jumping accidents or climbing accidents and fatal injuries in these sports and these experiences, the evidence, the statistics clearly show me that it's much more dangerous for me to get into a car at any point in my life, at any day, because it's just much more fatal. It's much higher probability that I'll die in a car crash than in any of these sports combined, probably. So again, as you know, my rational self, which is very strong in my personality, I think, is just overrides the the emotional survivalistic, like, oh no, you can't jump out. Well, yes, I can. I have very strong evidence to say that I'll probably survive, and it's gonna be a lot of fun. So why not just do it? So that's why people view it as extreme experiences, but in terms of, let's say, the real danger, I don't think that they are that extreme. Like, for example, I don't do free soloing. I don't go climbing without a rope, because even though it must be really thrilling, even more thrilling than normal climbing, which is already very thrilling, it's just too dangerous. And if I, there's just so much you can't account for, like a slippery stone, one slip and I die. So
there's no
I would room never, for error. I would never ever do that. Yeah,
absolutely no room for error. But do you think that the fact, obviously, much more deaths happen by car crash than by skydiving. But do you think that is because driving a car is more deadly than skydiving, or just because there are just way more people driving cars than going skydiving?
I don't think it's because of the amount, because well, the statistics tell you what is the probability, so it's a percentage, so it doesn't matter on the amount, it's just a percentage. And I think it's because skydiving, you know, jumping out of the plane, it just is such an extreme thing that there are really very strict safety requirements, and it has to be qualified instructors, and they have to check the equipment before every jump, because as there is also no room for error. Like, they don't check it properly once and the people die. So it's just much more controlled and much more strict. Whereas driving a car, you know, people do it when they are drunk. People are often speeding because people don't check their car every time they're about to drive to a shop, because it just seems like such a less likely dangerous or a less dangerous event. So it's just not so strict.
And driving a car is so normalized. You don't step into your car every day and you're like, I'm testing the boundaries. I'm risking my life stepping onto this car. Obviously not. Like, whereas if you go skydiving, it's something you don't do very often. It's not that you think, oh, I'm testing the boundaries, but obviously you'd get nervous, very nervous, because it's not very normal for humans to be that high up in the air, just jumping out. Like, your survival instincts again kick in. And I do agree that whenever you are in those situations, I feel like you do feel the most alive, because your adrenaline's pumping, your heart's beating, and you're so in the moment, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I was trying to say earlier that I don't think that a fear of death should be a reason for you to steer away from these things that could kill you. You know, it's not like, oh, go out there and like try to juggle with axes or something. That's not what I'm saying. But like, I don't feel like you should try to steer away from things that are slightly dangerous just because they could have a very small chance of killing you.
Yeah. Now when I'm thinking about the statistics, it's actually quite funny, because given the statistics, usually the reaction of people when you say you just went skydiving is like, wow, really? You did that? You're crazy. But given the statistics, it should be when you tell people you came by car yesterday, you know, home from the shop, they should be like, wow, you did that? You're crazy. You survived.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, like swimming with sharks. If you're swimming with sharks, you're probably less likely to die than if you're driving a car, which is so weird to think about, honestly. This discussion has really progressed in ways that I was not expecting before we sat down.
Yeah, but that's why we're unscripted. That's the reason. No, but that's true. Like, we just took like a sort of road, but I think like the content was good.
We talked about shows, had some pressing discussions with some backs and forwards,
and
devil's advocate.
One thing that I want to say is that most of the time we agree on everything, but this time we had some sort of disagreement. And no, I really like it. Like, it's because otherwise, oh, we always agree on everything. Oh, it's sorted. It's planned. No, nothing is planned. And this time we show that, and we receive like different inputs. And I liked it.
Yeah.
because
I agree.
I personally like don't share the same thing that Finn said about I would never like at any point say, oh, this is it with my life. While for me, at least at this moment, I know that if I would be in a situation that really doesn't allow me to live properly, like following my ideal, like what it means for me to live properly, I would probably end it if it's the case.
I know, but that's what it's like. We don't always agree in real life. Don't always agree here, but we can always talk it out. That's why we're on a podcast.
Yeah.
So yeah, thank you for tuning in for another episode of The Common Room, and we'll see you next month, guys.